Well, today, since we're talking about having our teacher appreciation with our fellowship meal today, I wanted us to think about teachers and wanted us to think about the fact that God needs teachers. You know, we sometimes don't realize that even though God, we think, well, He is all-knowing, He's all-powerful, He doesn't need anything. He has everything He needs. And yet, because of the way that His plan works, God does not directly talk to people in order to teach them about who He is. He instead has given us that task. He's given human beings the role of teaching other human beings about Him. So it's a fascinating thing when we consider that, that here we are, human beings who are frail and we live such short lives and we die, and yet there are times where God, who is all-powerful and all-knowing and lives eternally, needs us. And He needs teachers. As we consider this, let's think about the fact that teaching is tough. Any of us who have ever done any teaching, we know there are difficult times, and even whether it's teaching your own children as they're growing up or whether it's trying to teach others, it was the case of the two brothers who were fighting over the last brownie. And the mother heard them arguing about it, and she came in to try to resolve the conflict. She saw them fussing and fighting, arguing about that last brownie, and she said, "You know, here's my opportunity to teach them a deeper lesson." And so she said that famous question that we've heard so many times, "Now boys, what would Jesus do?" We think about that a lot of times. We think about what Jesus would do, and let's do the things Jesus would do, and let's be like Jesus. And so she said, "What would Jesus do?" And the oldest boy, just as quick as he could, spurted out, "He'd break it and turn it into 5,000. Well, I don't think that was quite the lesson she was trying to teach. And that happens sometimes. Sometimes the lesson learned is not necessarily the one that was intended. In his book, Balance, Ira North quotes C.J. Garner as saying, "As the Bible school goes, so goes the congregation." We often talk about how our young people are the future of the church. Of course, some of our young people are already the church in the present. But the little children, we think, you know, that's looking forward to what it's going to be in a generation or in two generations. They're going to be the leaders, they're going to be the teachers, they're going to be the elders and the deacons and the preachers and song leaders and all of these different things. They're going to be the ones that serve and help prepare meals for the sick and whatever else is being done. Those children are going to be the ones that do it. And so we need to take time to spend some energy and effort on those children. But of course, the Bible school, contrary to common opinion, is not just for children. Sunday school, Bible school, is for all of us. It's for us adults as well. And we set a good or poor example to the children by the way that we behave. If they see, well, Mama and Daddy and Grandma and Grandpa and Aunt and Uncle and other people, well, they don't go to Bible class, so it must not be that important. They learn that lesson well. And they'll learn, well, I don't need to go to Bible class. I promise you, you will learn more in Bible class than you will from the sermon. Almost every time. But in general, that's the case. You'll learn more in the Bible class than you will from the sermon. In the sermon, you get one person's perspective and one person's study and one person's material that they've put together and delivered. In the Bible class setting, you have the opportunity to study for yourself and the others in the class study for themselves, and you come together and you pool those things that you've studied to be able to share many different perspectives, to share insights that a lot of different people have. That's a benefit. That's a blessing. Of course, the scripture that was read in Psalm 119, verses 63 through 68, three times in this passage, in verses 64, 66, and 68, the psalmist begs God to teach him. And you know, it's something that we often don't even think about. We live in a self-help society. We live in a society where if you don't know how to do it, you just take it to an expert and let them do it for you. The idea of being taught something and learning it, we learn a special skill and that's all we know, and then we let the experts in the other fields do those things. So the idea of being taught and learning more and more and continuing to learn more and more is sometimes lost on us. But more so, the psalmist points out that God is the great teacher. And of course, God's Son, who came to earth as Jesus Christ, is the master teacher. We have the examples throughout the New Testament, throughout the Gospels particularly, of the ways that He taught and the things that He taught, and how He turned common everyday situations into an opportunity to help people get to know God better. What a wonderful thing that was. And He certainly is the master. But good teachers need to follow His example. Now, obviously, we're not going to live up to that. We're not going to be the master teacher like Him. But we can learn lessons from Him and become better teachers. As we consider these points, we want to consider that God needs teachers like Jesus who are these things that we're going to look at. First of all, God needs teachers like Jesus who are teaching truth. What you teach is of the utmost importance. Perhaps more important than ability or talent or skill or whatever you want to call it, is what are you teaching? Are you teaching what is true? The most eloquent and best of teachers in the world, if they're teaching something false, that's not a good teacher. But even the least skillful of teachers, if they're teaching truth, the students can still benefit from it. Now, obviously, we want to develop our skills as well as we can to be the best teachers we can be. But we want, and God needs, teachers who are teaching truth. In Matthew chapter 19, verses 16 through 22, we see Jesus teaching some truth. And the thing about teaching truth is, sometimes truth is not the most popular thing. Paul tells Timothy there are those that are going to heap teachers that will tickle their ears. They'll tell them what they want to hear. And that's what we like. We like the person who tells us all the good things about ourselves and never tells us any corrections or any of the bad things. But unfortunately, we need the correction. None of us is perfect, and we need someone to tell us the truth at those times. So there was a young man who came up to Jesus in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 16, and he said, "Teacher, what good deed must I do to have eternal life?" And Jesus said to him, "Why do you ask me about what is good? There is only one who is good. If you would enter life, keep the commandments." And he said, "Which ones?" And Jesus said, "You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and mother, and love your neighbor as yourself." The young man said, "I've kept all of these since I was just a kid, since I was a young man, since from my youth. What am I still lacking?" Now we might think, here's a young man who he wanted to know what he was still missing. He wanted the truth. Sounds like it. What am I still missing? I want to know the truth. So Jesus said, if you would be perfect, if you'd be complete, if you'd be mature the way you need to be, then Go and sell what you possess and give it to the poor, and you'll have treasures in heaven, and come follow me. When the young man heard this, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. He put his possessions ahead of Christ's truth. But Christ told him the truth. Christ told him what he needed to know. And it was up to him what he would do with it. As teachers, all we can ever do is tell people the truth and what they need to know. And then leave it up to them what they do with that information. We can't force them. We can't coerce them. The old saying, he convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Well, I have a feeling the real truth of that matter is he never really was convinced at all. He was coerced into doing something that he didn't want to do. But it is important for us to know the truth if we're going to teach it. Stories told of a preacher who went and visited a children's Sunday school class. And he asked the class, who knocked down the wall at Jericho? And one boy answered, it wasn't me. The preacher was a little surprised by this answer, and he asked the teacher, he said, is this the kind of answer that you get from these students about Bible questions? Teacher said, well, now preacher, this boy is a good child, he's honest, and if he says he didn't do it, then I don't think he did it. So the preacher went to the deacon over the Sunday school classes, and he talked to that deacon. He said, do you know what just happened? And he told him the whole story, and the deacon said, well, now that teacher's been a good teacher for many years, and the students, good family, faithful members of the church, and if they say that he didn't do it, then I don't think he did it. And you should be careful who you accuse of these things. So then he went to the elders. Went to the elders and said, do you know what happened in the Bible class? I asked this question. This was the response. And then I took it to the... And they said, now listen here. You're going out making these accusations. Did you see him knock that wall down? Because if not, you shouldn't be accusing people of stuff like this. Well, of course, hopefully that story is made up. But considering some of the statistics that only about 45% of people ever read the Bible and less than 12% read it daily, it wouldn't surprise me if that happened somewhere. It certainly could. As we think about teachers, we also realize that God needs teachers who are going to be exemplary, who are going to be good examples to those they're teaching. You know, children especially look up to their teachers. They may or may not, you know, they may like some teachers better than others for various reasons, but the fact of the matter is, those kids look up to those people who show an interest in them and care for them and teach them, and they'll follow those examples of those adults in their lives, whether it be a parent or a grandparent or a Bible class teacher or a school teacher or a next door neighbor or whatever the case may be. Somebody they see, you know, somebody that mommy or daddy works with, all these people that are in their lives, they see that and they'll copy that example. And so we need teachers, and God needs teachers who will set a good example. In John chapter 13, verses 13 through 15, Jesus did exactly that. He washed the disciples' feet, and afterwards he says, you call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for that's what I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done. There's the old saying in parenting, and I guess probably it would apply in teaching as well, more is caught than is taught. In other words, the example that you show teaches just as much, or perhaps more, than the words that you say. So we need to consider that and think about whether we're exemplary. And we also need to realize that God needs teachers who are going to be approachable. A teacher who seems so distant that everyone's afraid to talk to him, everybody's afraid to ask a question, that's not going to be a good teaching situation. That's a good lecturing situation, but not a very good teaching situation. In Mark chapter 9 and verses 28 and 29, after the disciples had failed to cast out a demon, it says that when they had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately. Now, they didn't want to ask out in front of everybody else, but they came to him privately and they asked him, "Why couldn't we cast it out?" And he said, "This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer." We've got to be able to approach those teachers that we have. And as teachers, and we've got some good teachers here, and appreciate the fact that all of them are willing to take that time and effort to do that teaching of our young people and teenagers and adults as well. And here we have a situation where sometimes people may have a question. Are they comfortable enough that they feel okay asking that question? Or are they afraid that they're going to get their head bit off if they ask a question? I can remember some teachers I had that were like that. You better not ask a question, because if you asked a question, you were going to get yelled at. Matthew 13 and verse 36 also says, "He left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples came to him, saying, 'Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field.'" He had just explained to them earlier in that chapter, he had just told the parable of the sower and explained that to them, and then he told this parable of the weeds, and so they come to him and they said, "Hey, we don't get that one either. Can you explain that one to us? What's that one mean?" But they weren't afraid to come to him most of the time. And some of the times when they were afraid, it was for foolish reasons. He was trying to teach them about the leaven of the Pharisees, and they were afraid to say anything to him because they thought he was talking about the fact that they didn't bring any food with them, and they had missed the point. Then we want to understand as well that God needs teachers who are child-friendly. We've got to be friendly toward those children. You know, children can tell pretty quickly whether somebody likes them or not. They can tell pretty quickly whether that's somebody to go to or somebody to stay away from. And I think it's very telling that one of the things that is said more than once about Jesus in His ministry was that the children came to Him. You know, it's hard to get children to go to somebody that they don't want to go to. You know, you've seen it sometimes. "Oh, go give Aunt Bertha a hug." "I don't want to." Sometimes that happens. They don't like that person. They're scared of that person, or there's something about that person that just... And it may be something silly. I've known some children who didn't like men with beards, and other children that didn't like men without beards. And, you know, I mean, just there's all sorts of different things that may happen there. But it's interesting that the children came to Jesus, and Jesus didn't push them away at all. In fact, in Matthew chapter 18 and verses 2 through 6, we see that He called a child to Himself and put the child in the middle of them and said, "Unless you turn and become like children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me." He takes this little child, pulls that little child right there, and then teaches, uses that little child as an example to teach a lesson to everybody that's there. Isn't that amazing? In Matthew 19 and verses 13 through 16, people were bringing children to Him. They wanted Him to lay the hands on them and pray for them and bless them. Well, his disciples were rebuking the people. But Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and don't hinder them. For to such ones belong the kingdom of heaven." And he laid his hands on them and they went away. What a wonderful story that is. Here's a chance. Jesus could have said, "Yeah, I don't want to be bothered with a bunch of kids. They're noisy and they, you know, they won't listen and they won't be still and they're rambunctious." But that's not what he did. He said, "Bring them in here." I've said it before and I'll say it again. There's not a sound better to hear in the congregation than the sound of children. Now, I know that sometimes that children, especially when it's your child and you're trying to keep them quiet, I know it can be distracting and I know it can be hard for you to be able to pay attention and get things out of the lessons and things like that. But, oh, if you've ever been in a congregation where there are no children, it's real quiet. Preacher doesn't get interrupted in his sermon at all. You know? Nothing like that. Don't have any children running around. You don't have to warn the children to, "You might be careful, slow down, you're going to knock somebody down," which we have to tell our children all the time. "Slow down, you're going to run into somebody and knock them down. Be careful." But, you know, that's the sound of a church that's dying. The sound of children is a wonderful thing. Even if it sometimes can be a little distracting and can be a little off-putting to some, it's a beautiful sound. You know, sometimes being friendly to the children, the children still may kind of relate to you in a different way than you might expect. One teacher was telling the children about an old Bible story, and the children then were on the way home, and mom and dad are asking, "Well, you know, what about this story? What'd you learn in Bible class today?" And they tried to tell it, and they couldn't get the story quite right, and said, "I can't remember this part." And so finally they asked them about it a little more, and finally the little girl was stumped, and she says, "You know what, I can't remember for sure, but ask my teacher, she was there." You know, sometimes children think we're older than we are, perhaps. But it is good for us to be child-friendly like Jesus was. And then we need to consider that we need to be, as teachers like Jesus, we need to be helpful. Jesus was helpful to those around Him. In Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38, Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages teaching and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction. Think about the health there. He was teaching for one thing, and that was helping the people. Of course, He was also able to do miraculous things and heal the diseases and things, and that's a wonderful thing that we can't imitate that like He did, but we can do the teaching like He did. But when He saw the crowds, verse 36 tells us, He had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And then He said to His disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest." You know, sometimes we are pretty good about helping people who are in need with their physical needs, financial needs, give them some food, help them with rent, power bill, give them some money for propane or something like that to keep, you know, we do those kinds of things. But sometimes we miss the bigger need that they have. I find it interesting that in Acts 16 and verses 9 and 10, Paul has a vision. And in that vision, there's a man from Macedonia that calls out to him in his dream, in his vision, and says, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." So, Paul sent a medical mission, right? Paul sent a bunch of eyeglasses. Paul sent somebody to dig wells and get them fresh water. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing any of those things. Those are all good things to do for people that have needs. But what did Paul, when he saw this man calling, "Come help us," notice what Luke says. When Paul had seen this vision, immediately we sought to go into Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. Teaching somebody about Jesus is the most important need that we can fill. You know, if we could conquer world hunger, if we could conquer all disease, if we could conquer all poverty throughout the world, if everybody had a house and clean drinking water, and everybody had the medical care that they needed, and everybody had every physical need taken care of, it would all be worthless if we haven't taught them about Jesus. I mean, they might feel better. They might feel, I mean, you know, it's better to have than not to have. It's better to be healthy than sick and all these. But without Jesus, all of those things are just things. True help involves teaching others about Jesus. And God needs teachers that do that. God also needs teachers that are empathetic. Empathy is difficult. It's easy for us to have sympathy for others. You know, we can feel for them. I feel bad for you because that's happened to you. But empathy means I can actually feel it with them. I actually feel the pain that they're feeling. I feel the suffering that they're feeling. In Mark chapter 6 and verse 34, Jesus went ashore and he saw the great crowd. He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. There are many cases where it talks about Jesus having compassion on them, and that's one thing. But Jesus was able to empathize with people too. Jesus is the one who was tempted in every way, just like us, but he didn't sin. Jesus was picked on. Jesus was mocked and made fun of. He was teased. He was called names. They told him that he was casting out demons by the prince of the demons. And all sorts of things. They said all sorts of cruel things about him. Eventually even to the point of trying to kill him on several occasions and ultimately having him arrested and crucified. He doesn't just feel compassion for us, but he also feels with us when we have those difficult times. He lived through those difficult times. He suffered loss and he suffered betrayal of a friend and he suffered all of those things. And he can feel for us and with us those things. But then the final thing that we want to notice here is that God needs teachers who will be respected. Now, part of that has to be with them being exemplary, like we talked about, of being a good example. But part of it is, we need to respect teachers. Not all of us are teachers. Now, I think all of us can grow and work toward being a teacher. And we may not be a big, you know, we may not be a classroom teacher in front of a large group. But all of us can teach in some little ways. Maybe we teach one-on-one with a friend or a relative. Maybe that's our bread and butter. That's what we're good at. Maybe we get real nervous in front of a big crowd, but we can be okay with one person. We don't have to all teach in the same way, but we all need to be teaching. The Hebrew writer tells the Hebrew Christians, by the time you ought to be teachers, he wrote that to the whole church. He said, there comes a time when you ought to be teachers. Now, I don't know exactly what that time is. He didn't say. And it differs from person to person. But he says, basically, you ought to be growing to the point where you can tell somebody else about Jesus. And you can teach them. But we need to respect teachers. In Luke chapter 6 and verses 39 and 40, Jesus told them a parable. Can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall in the pit? And then he said, a disciple is not above his teacher. Have that respect for that teacher. But everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Maybe you say, well, I've never been able to teach. Well, maybe you need to go sit in with a good class teacher and assist them and learn from them how to do it. We have some good class teachers, and if you want to learn how, go sit in with them. Talk with one of them and say, hey, can I sit in with you? Can I help you with your class and then learn how to teach the class myself? Don't be afraid of that. We can do it. Sometimes the things the teacher teaches aren't always respected, though. A story is told about the teacher who was telling about the crossing of the Red Sea. Big event. I mean, the Israelites leaving Egypt and crossing the Red Sea. And as the child was on the way home, the parents said, well, what did you study about? He said, well, we studied about the Israelites crossing the Red Sea. Oh, well, how did that go? Well, it's like this. They came up to the Red Sea, and it was a big body of water there, and Moses got the engineers, and they looked at it and measured it and made plans for a bridge. And then he got the construction crew, and they built the bridge that went across the Red Sea. And then they all went across the bridge, and then Pharaoh's army was coming up behind them, so Moses got the demolition crew, and they set some dynamite on the bridges, and when the Pharaoh's army got on the bridge, they blew it up, and they all fell in the water and drowned. And the parents said, is that what your teacher taught you in class today? The little boy said, well, that's not exactly what she said, but if I told you what she said, you wouldn't believe it. Sometimes we don't always respect as we should. As we think about a teacher, we need to think about one that is what God needs, one that's teaching truths, one that's exemplary, one that's approachable and child-friendly, helpful, empathetic, and respected. Now, Benjamin Franklin once said, tell me and I forget. Teach me and I remember. Involve me and I learn. Our goal with our Bible classes, our Sunday school, ought to be not just to tell them, not even just to teach them, but to involve them so that they learn these things, so that they then can pass it on to the next generation. So as we think about Bible class and our Bible class teachers, let's all get involved in Bible class on the learning side and the teaching side. Get involved and make our Bible class something that's worth coming to. Make our Bible class something that we look forward to, something that we plan in our schedules to be part of. It's important. And it's an opportunity for us to learn more about God and to get to know Him better. If you're here and you have a need to respond to God's invitation, perhaps you can teach, but you haven't. Perhaps you have taught, but you've quit. Perhaps you haven't given respect to the teachers that needs to be given. Perhaps you haven't appreciated those who taught you to bring you to where you are now. Whatever the case may be, if you have a need to respond to God's invitation, please come as we stand and as we sing.